We have coming now to part four. Part four in this mini-series on the 10 days in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. 10 days that had a greater impact on the world than any other 10-day period. For that period of time from the Thursday before the crucifixion to the Sunday after the crucifixion can truly be called the 10 days that shook the world. And part of the reason for giving it this year, the Passover week this year, coincides with Passover week in 31 AD. Passover was on, Christ observed it on Tuesday evening, and so will we. And as I will follow along through that 10-day period of this time, personally, I'm going through those 10 days back in 31 AD. Day one, Thursday before the crucifixion, Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus, anointed him, showing that honor comes to those who believe and who sacrifice. Day two, the Friday, he rides into Jerusalem. The crowds are shouting, Hosanna, and he cries. He cries. They were expecting a king to liberate them from Rome. And they did not understand his purpose in coming that first time was to liberate them from sin. He enters into the temple and he leaves. Day three, the Sabbath. He would no doubt have rested on the Sabbath day. Day four, the Sunday. He curses a fig tree and cleans the temple out of money changers and all of the animals that are inside of it. Day five, the Monday, he curses probably another fig tree and teaches and gives the Olivet Prophecy, the last full message that we have recorded before the Passover. Now we have the Passover message in John 13 to 16 and his high priestly prayer, but the last message that he gave was the Olivet Prophecy about the events that will happen before his return. Day six, Tuesday, he prepares for the Passover and he utters those outstanding words in his sermon in John 13 to 16 and gives that high priestly prayer in chapter 17. He is arrested, he is tried, he is condemned, he is crucified. We come to the time period that has been the subject of controversy for hundreds of years, hundreds. I want to start with a story about debt. I think I was the one who gave this to my grandson as opposed to vice versa. There was a man and his ever-nagging wife who went on vacation to Jerusalem. While they were there, the wife died. The husband started working with an undertaker in Jerusalem. The undertaker says, we can bury your wife here in the Holy Land for $150, or you can have her shipped back home for $5,000. The husband thought about it for a little while, and he told the undertaker that he would ship her back home. The undertaker asked, why? Why would you spend $5,000 to have her shipped back home when she could have a beautiful burial spot right here in the Holy Land, and it only costs $150. The husband replied, long ago, a man died here, was buried, and 3 days later, he rose from the dead. I just can't take that chance. Question. When was Jesus Christ crucified, and when was he resurrected? When was Christ crucified, and when was he resurrected? We go back to Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12, verses 38 to 40. Matthew chapter 12, beginning with verse 38. It says, and some of the scribes and Pharisees answered, saying, teacher, we want to see a sign from you. Quite interestingly, 4 chapters later, the same group asking the same thing. We want to see any sign of you. How many signs did he do? How many miracles were performed? They overlooked every one of them. And even with this sign, they overlooked it. We want to see a sign from you. Verse 39, he answered, and he said to them, an evil and an adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. Practically all commentators are in agreement that the expression 3 days and 3 nights does not mean 3 full days or 72 hours. I want to cite from a source, a couple of them, but primarily one who is a Bible scholar from the 20th century, especially in the Old Testament. He has a book that I think they're still using at the Foundation Institute, an Introduction to the Old Testament book, Gleason Archer. But this book, which is thicker than the one that he wrote, is entitled Encyclopedia of Bible Difficulties. Encyclopedia of Bible Difficulties. And the question, on which day of the week was Christ crucified? On which day of the week was Christ crucified? His answer, it is in general tradition that Christ was crucified on Friday of Holy Week, died at 3 p.m., the ninth hour of the day, and then rose again from the dead on Sunday at dawn, is correct. How can it be said that Jesus was 3 days and 3 nights in the grave? He was interred about 6 p.m., according to Luke 23:54. This would mean that the period of interment was only from Friday night to Saturday night before the resurrection on dawn of Sunday. And it would also mean only one dawn to sunset day, namely Saturday, had passed. How do you get 3 days and 3 nights out of 2 nights and 1 day? Which is a question that we have a tendency to ask. Must not the actual day of crucifixion have been Thursday or even Wednesday? My eyeballs popped out. I got this book 4 years ago, but my eyeballs popped out when I read that. Even Wednesday? Next paragraph, he says, it is perfectly true that a Friday crucifixion will not yield 3 full 24-hour days, but neither will a Thursday afternoon crucifixion nor a Wednesday afternoon crucifixion either. My eyeballs didn't pop out any longer. This results from the fact. Now, if I were writing an article and citing Dr. Archer, I would put this in all bold letters, probably even capitalize it with a parenthetical thought, my emphasis. As he said, this results from the fact that Jesus died 3 p.m. and rose at about 6 a.m. I interrupt. His answer is a fact. Jesus died at 3 p.m. and rose at 6 a.m. Is that a fact? Let's look at the time sequence. First of all, number one, Christ was crucified about 9 a.m. Christ was crucified about 9 a.m. I go to Mark chapter 15. I want to be here at Mark to begin with for a while. Mark chapter 15. Number one, Christ was crucified about 9 a.m. Mark 15:25. Mark 15:25 says, now it was the third hour, and they crucified him. Third hour, they start reckoning time at 6 a.m. Third hour would be 3 hours later, that would be 9 a.m. Christ now has gone through the arrest, the trial that he went through, and the condemnation by Pilate. He was condemned sometime around 6 o'clock in the morning, go on through the scourging, finally put up on the cross around 9 a.m. Number two, darkness descends over the area from noon to 3 p.m. Darkness descends over the area from noon to 3 p.m. Dropping down in Mark 15 to verse 33. Mark 15, verse 33. It says, now when the sixth hour had come, sixth hour would be noon, 12 p.m. There was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour, 3 p.m. So darkness descends over the land. It's crucified at night. Darkness descends over the land from noon to 3. Number 3, Christ dies about 3 p.m. Christ dies about 3 p.m. Continuing in Mark 15, verse 34. It says, and at the ninth hour, 3 p.m., Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which is translated, my God, why have you forsaken me? Some of those who stood by when they heard that said, look, he is calling for Elijah. Then someone ran and filled a sponge full of sour wine, put it on a reed, and offered it to him to drink, saying, let him alone. Let us see if Elijah will come to take him down. And Jesus cried out with a loud voice and breathed his last. This will be around ninth hour, about 3 p.m. Then number 4, Christ is buried before sunset. Christ is buried before sunset on the day that he died. Dropping down to verse 42 of Mark 15. Mark 15, 42. Now when evening had come, because it was the preparation day, that is the day before the Sabbath. Christ is crucified on a preparation day to the Sabbath. We'll deal with that later. But at the beginning of this verse, evening had come. Interesting word in the Greek. He is not saying when sunset had come, but when evening had come. Vincent Word Studies in the New Testament says the Hebrew breaking two evenings, an earlier and a later. The former evening began around 3 p.m. to sunset. And then the later one would be as the sun is setting. And the reason for that, he says, the evening here in verse 42 is this period between 3 p.m. and sunset. And it has to be the case because there's still things that are done before the Sabbath occurs. And they would not be done once the Sabbath occurs, especially when you consider how meticulously the Jews observed the Sabbath. So verse 42, and I read this out of the NIV. It says, it was preparation day, that is the day before the Sabbath, so as evening approached. This time period between the time in which he dies about 3 p.m. until sunset. We're still in the preparation day part of the day in which he was crucified. So continuing now with verse 43 of Mark 15. Joseph of Arimathea, a prominent council member who was himself waiting for the kingdom of God, coming and taking courage, went in to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Pilate marveled that he was already dead. Summoning the centurion, he asked him if he had been dead for some time. So when he found out from the centurion, he granted the body to Joseph. Pilate marveled. Why? Crucifix him with a lingering fall of death. It's not like going into the death chamber and maybe being electrocuted or putting your head in the guillotine and having your neck chopped off. This was a lingering form of death. It would take hours to expire, sometimes even days to expire. Christ is put on the cross at 9 a.m. By 3 p.m., he's dead. Pilate marveled. But notice what all is going on. Joseph goes to Pilate. As for the body, Pilate has to confirm that he is indeed dead. He goes to the centurion. Centurion corroborates that, and he comes back now to Joseph. And as it says, verse 45, so when he found out from the centurion, he granted the body to Joseph. Then he bought fine linen, took him down, wrapped him in the linen, and he laid him in a tomb which had been hewn out of the rock and rolled a stone against the door of the tomb. And Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, observed where he was laid. So is it a fact that he died about 3 p.m.? Yes. Yes. However, is it a fact that he rose at 6 a.m.? The sign that was that he would be in the heart of the earth. He would be in the tomb. He would be at the grave 3 days and 3 nights. If he is put in the tomb near sunset, he could not be resurrected at sunrise. Taking the sign literally in Matthew 12, verse 40, he would exit from the tomb near sunset. So if he rose at 6 a.m., we must reject the literal interpretation of the sign in Matthew 12, verse 40, because the sign must mean something else. The primary scripture, to quote unquote support a 6 a.m. resurrection is Mark 16:9. Mark chapter 16, verse 9. So you go over to the next chapter. Mark 16, verse 9. It says this. Now when he rose early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast 7 demons. Okay. Does it tell us when? It says when he rose early on the first day of the week. When? Does it say 6? It doesn't say. The structure of the sentence could imply a resurrection at about 6 a.m. When he rose early on the first day of the week. Does it tell us exactly when, but early on the first day of the week, according to the structure, when he rose early on the first day of the week, comma. Reading it that way might cause, as it has, many to conclude Christ was resurrected early Sunday morning. Let me bring up a point about punctuation. Punctuation was not part of the original manuscripts. It was added later by the translators to try to clarify meanings. If you study Greek, Koine Greek, especially the Gospel of John, you've got letters. All you've got are letters on a parchment, on a manuscript. You just go letters line by line, and there is no division of words. It's just letters all the way across, line by line. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, F, and you just keep on going. It's all the way throughout the document. Translators then had to be able to make the discernment as to where the words were, and then insert periods, insert colons, insert semicolons, insert commas. But punctuation is important. I cite one document. There was a man who wasn't the easiest guy in the world to get along with. And as he is running, he said, when my anniversary rolled around, I wanted my wife to know how much I really appreciated her tolerating me for the past 20 years. I ordered flowers, told the florist to enclose a card that read, quote, thanks for putting up with me so long, period, end quote. Thanks for putting up with me so long, period. When my wife got the delivery, she called me at work. She said, where do you think you're going? She asked. What do you mean? I said. She read the card aloud as the florist had written it. Quote, thanks for putting it up with me, period, so long, period, end quote. The florist added the period. It changed the message altogether. And that could be the case even with the comma here. However, practically all translators are in agreement that there is a comma that comes after the word wait. You look at literal translations of the Bible, such as will be used with the King James, New King James. You look at freer translation of the Bible, like NIV, popular one. You look at paraphrases, like the New Living Translation. All of them follow along with what we have just read. Now, when he rose early on the first day of the week, come. Is this supported by the gospel accounts? We will look at each one. More technical sermon today, but we will look at each one. And it's a matter of just going through the four gospel accounts to come up with a conclusion of what we're talking about here with this sign, Matthew 12:40. We're going to start in Matthew 28. Matthew chapter 28, verses 1 to 7. Matthew 28, verses 1 to 7. It says, now after the Sabbath, as the first day of the week began to dawn, the Greek word, epiphosko, it means to grow light, to dawn, sunlight, sunrise. As we are coming to sunrise, there's lexicon, vines are in agreement with the meaning of that word epiphosko. It goes on, it says, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to see the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake. For an angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat on it. His countenance was like lightning, and his clothing as white as snow. And the guards shook for fear of him and became like dead men. But the angel answered and said to the woman, do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified. Verse 6, he is not here, for he is risen. As he said, come, see the place where the Lord lay. Go quickly, tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead. And indeed he is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him. Behold, I have told you. Thayer's lexicon. Laodicea. Prominent lexicon. State that this verbal expression, for he is risen, is not in the active voice, but the passive voice. It is not in the active voice of is rising, but is in the passive voice, has been raised. Verse 6, he is not here, for he has been raised. Verse 7, and go quickly and tell his disciples that he has been raised. Well, when did he rise? Matthew doesn't say. It doesn't say. The women come at sunrise, but it had already been raised. When? We don't know. Not from Matthew. We go next to Mark. We read the preceding verses, the context of Mark 16. Mark 16, 1 to 8. Mark 16, verses 1 to 8. Mark 16, beginning with verse 1. When the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene, the mother of James and Salome, bought spices and that they might come and anoint him. Very early in the morning, on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb when the sun had risen. Oneida, again, Vexicon, changing from darkness to light early morning hours. You're coming into the dawn period of the day. The sun is rising. Over in the east, it is rising. So this is when they come. The sun is rising. Continuing, verse 3. And they said among themselves, who will roll away the stone from the door of the tomb for us? But when they looked up, they saw that the stone had been rolled away, for it was very large. Entering the tomb, they saw a young man clothed in a long white robe sitting on the right side. And they were alarmed. But he said to them, do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified, not the active voice, but the passive voice. He has been raised. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go and tell his disciples and Peter, and he is going before you into Galilee. There you will see him, as he said to you. So they went out quickly and fled from the tomb, for they trembled and were amazed, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. So when did he rise? When did he rise? As it says here in verse 6, do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. When did he rise? Mark doesn't tell us. Matthew doesn't tell us. Mark doesn't tell us. He has been. Before sunrise, he has been raised. Then we go to the third synoptic gospel, Luke. Luke 24. Luke 24, we're in 1 to 6. Luke 24, beginning with verse 1. It says, now on the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they and certain other women with them came to the tomb, bringing the spices which they had prepared. But they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. You see the similarity of the messages here in the synoptic gospels. You read it in the harmony, you see the similarity. Verse 3. Then they went in and did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. And it happened, as they were greatly perplexed about this, that behold, two men stood by them in shiny garments. Then as they were afraid and bowed their faces to the earth, they said to them, why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here, but has a voice. Has been raised. Has been, not in rising, has been raised. Remember how he spoke to you when he was still in Galilee. So when did he rise? Luke doesn't say. Luke doesn't say. Only one other gospel, and that is John. He doesn't say a lot, but we'll read it anyway. John 20, verse 1. John 20, verse 1. John chapter 20, verse 1, it says, now the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early while it was still dark. Okay, so we're in this window. As we're moving from darkness to light, while it was still dark, they saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb, and they interact with the angel, go back and tell Peter and John, and Peter and John comes. But that's about it from John chapter 20. When did he rise? John doesn't say. So is it a fact that he died 3 p.m. or thereabouts? Yes. Is it a fact that he rose at 6 a.m. or thereabouts? The Gospels do not support that.
He had been raised. It doesn't tell us when. He has been raised. Well, when did he rise? This is the sign that he gathers in Matthew chapter 12, verse 40. For as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the fish, the Son of Man will be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. The sign.
They've taken it early. He had been raised before the women came to the tomb, all those like 6 hours, 12 hours before. We'll see that as we proceed through. So let me finish up. Ethan Archer and his comment on the 3 days and three nights. He says, what then is the meaning of the expression in Matthew 12:40, 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth? This can only, again, by writing an article, and I'm citing Ethan Archer, I would put this in all bold letters or all cap letters with a parenthetical thought, emphasis mine. As he said, this can only refer to 3 24-hour days in Clark's or in folk. That is to say, Jesus expired at 3 p.m. near the close of Friday, according to the Hebrew method of reckoning, each day at the beginning at sundown, which would be one day, then Friday 6 p.m. to Saturday 6 p.m. would be the second day, and Saturday 6 p.m. to Sunday 6 p.m. would constitute the third day, during which, that is, Sunday 6 a.m. or a little before, Christ arose. Christ rested in Hades for a portion of 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. This is the way every commentary that I have read interprets it. Everyone. Because if you read it literally, you read Matthew 12, verse 40, literally, 3 days and three nights, literally, the religious holidays of the Friday and Easter Sunday have no biblical supporting
for the timing of the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
They have not. I bring out one other book, copywritten in 1951, 20th century gospel preacher by the name of George D. Hoff. His book is entitled Alleged Bible Contradictions Explained. Takes a different tack. Ethan Archer Denise goes more into a scholarly approach with not this one. George D. Hoff starts off with the question, how long was Christ in the grave? How long was Christ in the grave? He starts off with the answer, infidels. Now that can get your attention right off the bat. Because really what he is about to say, if you believe in a literal interpretation of 3 days and three nights, you are an infidel. So my eyes pop up. It did at Gleason Archer and it did at George Theo.
Infidels should familiarize themselves with the figure of speech known as synecdoche,
wherein a part is spoken of as a whole. The Jews use this method of calculating. If a king ruled 19 and a half years, it is simply stated that he ruled 20 years, the part of the year being correctly counted as a whole year. As best I can recall, and I haven't looked this up in a while, going back to the time of Dr. Haig, the time it was ascendancy to the throne for those in legal or in the regal responsibility in Israel was the Feast of Trumpets, Molad of Tishri, the first day of the seventh month. That's when they officially began their rulership. So if they started in June, they would officially start the counting, Molad of Tishri. If they started their rulership in December, official, they would not actually begin until the Molad of Tishri or Feast of Trumpets. So they would round it off. Round it off. How close am I to the Feast of Trumpets? But this is what he is saying. They would round it off. If they are now coming to the throne 19 and a half years, they could round it off to 20 years. But this brings up an interesting point, because it brings out another example in modern times, the President of the United States, Franklin Roosevelt, who had 8 years, seven and a half, actually it is 7 years, 10 and a half months, they rounded off 8 years. He's rounding off months to year. Rounding off month to year. Good, fine. We can do that. We do that quite often. What if you round off hours to days? What if I round off hours to days? Okay? What if I have 18 hours and I want to round that off to days? I can round it off probably about 1 day. Almost about 1 day. What if I had 36 hours? 36 hours and I want to round it off to days. And go back maybe 1 day. Why to go forward to 2 days? One thing I'm not going to do on randomly off 36 hours is round it off 3 days. This is what the man is saying an infidel will do. How do you take 36 hours or 39 hours of 3 p.m. on crucifixion day to 6 a.m., that is 39 hours, or 36 hours from sunset on crucifixion day, about 6 p.m., to sunrise on resurrection day of Sunday, 36 hours, and round that off to days, you're going to round it off to 3 days? It doesn't work that way. You only round it off to 2 days. Something is missing. You see, that's when you're an infidel. You can't round off things like the way he is saying here. So he goes back to Jonah. Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and not 72 hours. He was about to say, you know, well, when Jonah comes up, you can ask him, how long were you in that fish? If you had a watch, can you tell? He was swallowed 1 day, parentheses, day and night. Remained in the fish the second, parentheses, another day and a night. Was discharged the third, parentheses, another day and a night. It may be correct, he said, that he was 3 days and three nights, a part of 3 days in the fish. It's due to that reasoning you can understand why God called the foolish in the world. Because it is difficult to comprehend some of the simplest things in the Bible. Matthew 12, verse 40, of course, Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. Commentary after commentary says it is a Greek idiom or a figure of speech, but it is based on Jonah 1, verse 17. And if it's based on Jonah 1, verse 17, that means that Jonah 1, 17 had to be a Hebrew idiom or figure of speech. Jonah 1:17. It says, now the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. So it is assumed then that this is a figure of speech or an idiom. E.W. Bullinger, in his companion Bible, he has a very subtle glossary at the end of appendices. In Appendix 144 of Companion Bible,
He says the fact that 3 days is used in Hebrew by Hebrew idiom for any part of 3 days and three nights is not disputed, because that was the common way of reckoning, just as it was when used of years. Three or any number of years was used inclusively of any part of those years, as may be seen in the reckoning of the reigns of the kings of Israel and Judah. You just got to round it up. But when the number of nights is stated, as well as the number of days, then the expression ceases to be an idiom and becomes a literal statement of fact. Is that the case? Is Jonah 1:17 a figure of speech? And therefore, Matthew chapter 12, verse 40, a figure of speech, we're going to count. We're going to count 3 days and three nights as we wrap this up. But I want to go back in the Old Testament. Does the Bible count 3 days and three nights? When God created the heavens and the earth, I just wonder, in his infinite wisdom, he was looking down on time. That 4,000 years later, people wouldn't know how to count. People wouldn't know how to count. Go back to Genesis chapter 1. So right at the very beginning of the Bible, he counts. He counts. Genesis chapter 1. Start with verse 3. Then God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light that it was good. God invited the light from the darkness. 19th century commentary, Notes on Genesis by George Bush, says this: the division of the light from the darkness here spoken of is undoubtedly the succession of one to the other, arising from the revolution of the earth round its axis, a strong confirmation of the opinion that the sun had already been brought into being. The earth rotates on its axis how long? We call it one day. Hours, though, how long? How many hours? We learned that in school. It's 24. Not exactly, but it is 24. If we are dealing with 24 hours, how many hours of light? How many hours of darkness? As it rotates. Hold it here in Genesis 1. And this is out of the mouth of Jesus Christ in John 11. John chapter 11. John 11, 9 to 10. John 11, 9 to 10. Jesus answered. This is Jesus. Answered. Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if he walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him. Now we are dealing with Jerusalem, area. In Jerusalem, April 4th, Passover, this year, the sunrise is 6:23 a.m. Sunset is about 7 p.m. It is similar to the southern part of the Caribbean. You've got, during that period of time, when about 12 hours a day, 12 hours a night. Some try to come up with some alternate explanation. Well, what if you're up in the Arctic? We're not in the Arctic. We're in Jerusalem. 12 hours of the day. He says it. 12 hours in the day. Which therefore means that the earth is rotating on its axis. That means 12 hours at night. I bring this up because many years ago, I had an individual started attending church.
And when they start attending church, they start reading the literature and they see things that are different from what they believe. I think most of us that come out of a different organization, we did that. He invited me to come to his house to talk to him, his wife, and his family, friends, as well as one of the pastors of the church that he had come from. So he wanted me to explain why we do not observe Easter, Good Friday. Now, I'm going to go through the explanation that I've given, and I generally give anyway, is the simplistic explanation on how we can come up with 3 days and three nights based on the gospel account. I went through Luke 23, I went through Mark 16, both 15 to 16, and back to Luke chapter 23, and just pointed out day after day after day. I said, on the basis of that, we're dealing with three full days as a fulfillment of what he said in the promise that he made to the scribes and the Pharisees of the sign that he would be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. That's three full days of 12 hours, three full nights of 12 hours. Well, the preacher raised the hand. He said, how do you know it? There were 12 hours in the day.
Said,
here we go. And guess what? I said, that was simple. I like that. Glad to ask the question. You know, we like to do that when you already know the answer. I love that. That's the question. Go over here to John chapter 11. Let's read it. Are there not 12 hours in the day? And if there are 12 hours in the day, are there also not 12 hours in the night? Hand goes up. How do you know that there are only 12 hours in the night? Back in that time, there may have been 2 hours. There may have been 3 hours. How many of us all live for 12 hours in the night? Every funny time, I was thinking of a couple of things going, blah, 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 blah. But when I was about to say, and let me ask the group there, how do you know preacher so-and-so had his brain? We could go ahead and tell us, hello, head over and find out it wanted, didn't ever happen to know. When you start thinking outside of being outside of the box, thinking like an infidel, things make sense. But you go back to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1, verse 5. God called the light, already said, day. We already looked at John 11, 12 hours in the day. The darkness he called night. So the evening, one night, one dark period, 12 hours. And the morning, the day period, the light period, 12 hours were the first day. First day, 12 hours of darkness, 12 hours of light. Verse 6. God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it be divide the waters from the waters. Then God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. God called the firmament heaven. So the evening coming to the second day. So far we've got two evenings, two nights, the night to be 12 hours each. That is 24 hours a night, and morning, 2 days of the light, 12 hours each, 24 hours, 24 hours of night, 24 hours of day, were the second day so far, and we're counting. And then verse 13, so the evening, three nights, 12 hours of night, 12 hours of night would be times 3, 36, and the morning, 3 days, 3 12-hour days of light,
36 hours were the third day. 3 days, three nights equals how long?
36 hours of night, 36 hours of day, 72 hours. Can we prove this from the New Testament that Christ was in the tomb in 3 days and three nights? Before we get to the simplistic explanation, let me start in John 19. John 19, verse 30 to 31. John 19, verse 30 to 31. It says, so when Jesus had received the sour wine, he said, it is finished, and he, bowing his head, gave up his spirit. Therefore, because it was the preparation day, that the bodies should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day. Christ is crucified on a preparation day. John defines that day that he is crucified on, preparation day. It is before the Sabbath, and he says that Sabbath is a high day. Is it the seventh day of the week or a different Sabbath? Robertson's word picture of the New Testament says a high day, megalia, M-E-G-A-L-E-E, megalia, a great day, since the Sabbath day following synchronizes with the first day of unleavened bread, which was a great day. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown commentary said that megalia, or a great day, as being the first Sabbath of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the most sacred season of the whole Jewish ecclesiastical year. So Christ is crucified on a preparation day. We know that was the Passover. It is in preparation for the Sabbath, which is a high day. Is that high day the first day of unleavened bread? Mark chapter 14. Mark chapter 14, verse 1. Mark 14, verse 1. It says, after 2 days, it was the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Chief priests and scribes sought how they might take him by trickery so that they could put him in debt. You tie that in, and I'm not going back there. Leviticus 23. We have had Leviticus 23 drilled in us almost from the time we walked into the church. All of the festivals are mentioned in Leviticus 23, starting with the Sabbath. Then it goes in and it talks about the 14th day of the first month as the Passover. Then it mentions the 15th day of the first month as what? A holy day. That holy day is the first day of unleavened bread. You go through Leviticus chapter 23 and comes down in the latter part of the chapter where it describes the Day of Atonement as Sabbath. Sabbath. Then as it is wrapped up, God giving these instructions to Moses, he wraps up Leviticus 23 and verse 38, besides the Sabbaths, that these are Sabbaths, not just the seventh day of the week. There are holy days, holiday Sabbaths, festival Sabbaths. So Christ is crucified, killed on the Passover, which was a preparation day to the high day, Sabbath, which was the first day of unleavened bread. Is there internal scriptural evidence to prove which day of the week was the first day of unleavened bread? The day after he was crucified. These are the three scriptures. Have them drilled in mind. You start in Luke chapter 23. Luke chapter 23, beginning with verse 50. Luke chapter 23, beginning with verse 50. It says, now behold, there was a man named Joseph, council member, good and just man. He had not consented to their decision. Indeed, he was from Arimathea, city of the Jews, who himself was also waiting for the kingdom of God. This man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then he took it down, wrapped it in linen, laid it in a tomb that was hewn out of a rock, where no one had ever lain before. That day was the preparation, and the Sabbath drew on. What preparation day? We read in Leviticus 23. We read what is stated in the gospel accounts. That preparation day was the Passover. And the Sabbath, or the high day, the first day of unleavened bread, drew on. And the women who had come with him from Galilee followed after, and they observed the tomb, how his body was laid. Then they returned and prepared spices and fragrant oils. He is put inside of the tomb near sunset. Near sunset. It says here in verse 56, they returned and prepared spices and fragrant oil. Would they have done that on Sabbath? Leviticus 23 again says that is a stipulation. You don't do that. That is work on the Sabbath. So what are we dealing with here? They saw when he was laid. They returned and prepared spices. When? We're hard now. Go to Luke 23, go to Mark 15. Beginning in verse 42. Mark 15, beginning with verse 42. It says, now when evening had come, because it was the preparation day, the Passover, that is the day before the Sabbath, the first day of unleavened bread. Dropping down without reading these intervening verses. Verse 47. And Mary Magdalene, and Mary, the mother of Joseph, observed where he was laid. End of chapter 16, now verse 1. Now, when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James, and Salome bought spices that they might come and anoint him. When the Sabbath was passed, they bought spices that they might come to anoint him. To wrap this up, go back to Luke chapter 23 and verse 56. Luke 23, verse 56, to finish this off. Then they returned and prepared spices and fragrant oils and rested on the Sabbath according to the command. What is the Sabbath according to the commandment?
The seventh day of the week. The seventh day of the week.
When you read these three in succession to each other, they prepared spices, they bought spices the day before the Sabbath according to the commandment, that would be the Friday.
That would be Friday.
That would mean then that they rested on the Sabbath that was a holy day, a high day.
That would be the Thursday. That would be the Thursday.
And they observed, therefore, where Jesus Christ was laid, as the sun is setting, the evening portion of the sun setting, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., somewhere in that window.
And the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea, that would be the Wednesday. That would be the Wednesday. You just proceed through Luke 23 and Mark 15, 16, and just juxtapose all of the accounts. You come to the conclusion, Jesus Christ died, was interred on Wednesday, and rose and came out of the tomb 3 days and three nights on Saturday. How do I know? The Bible tells me so. The Bible tells me so. And then to me, as I wrap this up, and it might start asking me, what did he do from the time he resurrected before he actually ascended into heaven, before he actually encountered Mary Magdalene? Don't know. Does it say it when he was resurrected? Whatever he did, we see that the clothes, the garments were, or the cloth was folded up. The handkerchiefs were folded up. What did he do then? We don't know. But he did not ascend up into heaven until the following Sunday morning.
But I'm going to go back here and finalize this in Matthew chapter 12, verse 39. Matthew 12, 39. It says, but he answered it and said to them, even an adulterous generation seeks after a sign, but no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. The sign was assigned to the Jews. They were the evil and adulterous generation. He says, and even an adulterous generation seeks after a sign. I want to give you one. You disregarded all the other signs I've given you, I'm going to give you one. Just as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights on the heart of the earth, or in the belly of the fish, some man will be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. Even that sign, they just overlooked. They missed it. Most of you are not as familiar with baseball as I am, so I wanted to clip out a piece out of a comic strip, BC, many years ago. And I thought it was just hilarious, and certainly ties in with this one. Because on baseball field, you got a third base coach, and he is giving signs to the batter in the box. And he might be telling the batter in the box to go ahead and take the pitch from the pitcher. Or maybe get somebody on first base. You swing behind him, let the ball go behind the batter or the runner on the first base. Or you then try to butt the ball to try to advance the runners on the base. You go through a number of things. And so the third base coach, he goes through all his rigmarole, and the batter was not getting the sign. And the third base coach decided to get a big old placard and write it on it, but, and held it up, not only for the batter to see, but for the pitcher to see, and everybody on the field to see, but. And a couple of the team come around and I said, what are you doing? Does everybody's coach hurt? Third red scope says he keeps missing the sign. And that's the thing with the Jews. They kept missing the sign. And I just wonder if there is a coincidence. Because they observe a Passover. The Jews in the time of Jesus Christ observe a Passover. And there's no question in our minds that the Passover Christ observed on the Tuesday evening is the same Passover we observe. But the Jews observe one on Wednesday. And what we find in the temple, as well as in the homes, possibly, that around 3 p.m. on Wednesday, 31 A.D., the high priest Caiaphas, according to Josephus, would take out the knife and slice the throat of the first lamb to be slain. Coincidentally, at the same time, the soldiers stuck with spear in the side of Jesus Christ, and blood and water came out of the side, and he died.
Did they get it?
Nope. They miss it altogether.
Christianity get it?
No. They miss it altogether. And it is because of their primary holiday. Christmas isn't. Easter is. And they will go through all of the different machinations to try to support Good Friday, Easter Sunday morning, and it is bogus. Christ died on Wednesday, resurrected, exited the tomb on Saturday, and he fulfilled one other event on the Sunday morning of the wave sheaf, to take away the sins of mankind, which we'll talk about next week, or maybe we looked. But let us be thankful for the crucifixion. Let us be thankful for the resurrection. Let us rejoice at God's acceptance of his sacrifice, for what he has done has paved the way into eternity for you, for me, for all of mankind. And let us realize we're part of the revolution. As we started this series, the revolution that has been going on now for 2,000 years and will ultimately overtake the world. The revolution began on the final days of the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. For truly, those days can be called the 10 days that shipped the world.